Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on K-Radio on a winter-like Thursday in January. Many thanks to our great Sport Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, High Voltage Bar and Dance, Exchange Bank, and Taco John's. Gus Counts with me here, Tom Counts, and the upcoming sports schedule, just like you'd expect it to be in January, jam-packed full of games. And we'll be next up tomorrow night is tournament week, which has been just a fight. We'll be talking about that, getting games in because of the weather. Tomorrow night we're going to be at the Oskaloosa tournament for a couple of games, 6 and 7:30. Saturday we'll have the Benedictine Ravens as they're going to be back on the road the fourth consecutive time. Gus, they haven't been at home in 3 weeks, and Ravens are going to be at Clark because of the distance. Early's games, ladies game at noon, guys game at 2. Next Tuesday and then Friday we will be in Winchester, the Jefferson County North Girls Invitational midseason tournament. So we'll have high school games in there. We'll talk about that. And then Wednesday, before Sports Look, we'll have the Ravens back at home finally. They have Central Methodist in the Nolan next Wednesday, 5:30 and 7:30. Gus, don't even know where to begin. We've been fighting schedules. Everybody's been fighting a schedule with the weather, trying to get these midseason tournaments in. Some of them have just pushed them back a day. That's what Oskaloosa did. Some of them just got so tired of trying to figure it out, they said, you know what, we're just not going to do it. But, of course, you know, you have one site where Atchison's at down at Tonganoxie. It's rain or shine down there.
Yeah, you know, it's that time of the year where if you can get there, get them in, get them going. Because, again, the other problem is some of these schools didn't build in a buffer where, you know, they'll take the week off next week. They've got games again next week. So some of these teams are trying to push forward, get games in. And done. Every coach you talk to, as you get closer and closer to sub-state and state basketball, they'll want those games in, right? Because those games count towards your seeding. And, it's a big deal.
Yeah, and again, the 6th and 5th Annual Tonganoxie Tournament, Atchison is down there, and they're going to be in action tonight at 6 o'clock. So Atchison playing at 6 this evening.
And, with Wamego.
Well, against Wamego, who knocked off Schlegel in round one. Bottom half of the bracket, the 7:30 game. Who are we going to have? Eudora and the host team, right? Did Bonner Springs win that?
Yeah. So okay. Bonner Springs beat Tonganoxie 63-56. So okay. Bonner is going to take on Metro, who beat Eudora 62-58. So on the right side of the bracket, or the winner's side, you're going to have Atchison and Wamego at 6 o'clock. At 7:30, it will be Metro Academy versus Bonner Springs. On the back side of the bracket, you've got Christ Prep versus Schlegel. And then you've got Tonganoxie and Eudora. So,
and those bottom half of the brackets, back side of the bracket, what do we want to call it, start at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Started at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So,
well, let's take a look at Saturday. Their games start at 11:30, and the championship game is at 6 o'clock tentatively.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's one of those things where that's a long day of basketball.
But anyway, we're going to, again, be down in Oskaloosa at the Oskaloosa Boys Tournament, and a couple of games coming your way here on K-Radio from there. So we look forward to bringing those to you.
Next week, you're going to be in Nortonville.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm going to go to the Winchester.
Or Winchester.
Yeah, because they play in both.
Right.
Okay? They play at the EMS, the Elementary Middle School, as the Nortonville facility. There are going to be games there, but also there are going to be games in Winchester.
I always enjoyed playing at the middle school, or the elementary school.
Great.
In Nortonville.
Great gym. Yeah. Great floor. All good. And so they will be playing games basically simultaneously at 6 and 7:30 on the first night of the tournament, which is going to be next Tuesday. The games that we will not have on Care Radio are going to have at 6 o'clock Oskaloosa and Perry LeCompton, and at 7:30 it'll be Rossville and ACCHS. Okay, those are going to be played in the Nortonville facility. The games we'll have on Care Radio are going to come from the home stadium, if you will, down at the Winchester High School gymnasium. At 6 o'clock we will have the NEK Nighthawks and Valley Falls. And then at 7:30, it'll be the number one seed, Jefferson County North, and they are going to be playing the Phoenix of Atchison High School. So last year we had the Phoenix, and they were playing down in the in the Nortonville building, and we had a game with Rossville with them. So we always like getting down there, and it's nice to see Atchison getting to play, you know, some of the other kind of local teams and mix it up a little bit, huh? So you've got that, and then of course winners will be playing Friday, and we'll have those games at 6 and 7:30. So we'll be interested to see just how all of that business shakes out.
Do you realize? Here we are. We have one sports look left in January.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that shows you how fast the season's going. And again, we always talk about the thirds. You break it down into before Christmas break to midseason tournaments. And then from that tournament to sub-state, it goes quickly now.
Yeah, it's going to be moving month,
you know,
pretty quick.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying is, you know, we got one sports look left before we're into moving month. And moving month moves right by, right? I mean, it is. It's a short month. It's fast. You've got lots of games. You're hopefully not dealing with weather, but the way this winter has been, you got to figure that you're probably going to see a little weather that will change some things. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that we're right up against it right now.
And so, yeah, you've got all of that stuff going on. Lots of games have been going on, even last night, you know, around the area in various summer tournament games, and some like the Jefferson County North guys, they played St. Mary's Academy because, you know, there's other stuff going on. And you had the JCN coming up with a dub there. ACCHS fell to Perry LeCompton in tournament play. And so, you know, you have a lot of games going on.
That's the other thing is if you're not in a tournament this week, you still try to find somebody maybe to play because, yeah, you like to get a little rest, but you also don't want to have too much rest and maybe get a little rusty. And we're going to talk about teams that could have too much rest and a little rusty in segment four, but that's a minute before we get there.
Yeah. Okay. Are we about done with the high school stuff? Because I got to take a big curve. I'm going to throw a curveball at you completely. I mean, this is out in left field. This is kind of different stuff.
You're going to throw a curveball at me. I couldn't hit them. So
you could never. You went through the high heat.
You take the shoulder and you just lean into it, yeah, and get hit. That'll get you on. Okay, let's go.
All right, last night I went to Peru State with Benedict, and we're going to be talking about those ball games and the Ravens and Lady Ravens here in just a minute. And it is not the first time that I have run into this, and it's becoming, frankly, more and more prevalent, and I'm just wanting to know your opinion. And if anybody's got an opinion about this and wants to share, send an email to careradio@gmail.com and tell me what you think. Okay, no more paper anywhere. You walk into a gymnasium at the ticket counter, okay, there is a
QR code,
and you scan that and you get the rosters. Sure. You walk in and you want to purchase admission to the game, they do not accept cash, it must be paid for on a card. You go to the concession stand. They're all holding like a little Game Boy. Remember what Game Boy was? Right. Like a Switch today, okay? A Switch. And it's got a little screen on it. And you want a Snickers? Okay. Couple of bucks. Click it up on there. You reach into your wallet and they shake their head at you. No. You have to pull out the old Visa and purchase that there and scan it or whatever. And I understand why they do it, okay? Because you don't want to print 500 programs, use 100 and throw 400 away, and the 100 that you use are thrown away after the game. So I understand the ecological impact of that, and I understand that at the concession stand, whoever's working it, they push in one bag of Doritos, one Snickers bar, and a soda.
I don't have to do math.
There's no math.
Right.
There's no fight and change. You know, if it's, you know, $4.76 and you hand them a $5 bill and a penny, there's no confusion.
Right.
Because I get that look a lot of times.
Getcha.
So, you know, it's all on the card, and I'm sure accounting is easier. You don't have to worry about somebody holding up the strong box because there's no money.
Right.
Okay. So the problem is, for me, man, I need to have a program. Fortunately, we print those and take them with us. Otherwise, we would never have them. And, you know, I'm just not accustomed to it. And not all people are equipped to be able to buy that Snickers because they may not have a card. So, you know, is there a solution? Am I just going to have to accept this is how it's going
to
be?
You're just going to have to grit your teeth and bear through it, right? You know, I mean, I think that we ran into that during football this year. We were up in Oskaloosa, Iowa.
Yep.
And I remember I walked down to get a water, and the concession guy said $1.75. Pull out $2, and he said, "Oh, I can't take that." And I'm like,
"No,
okay, hold on, let me get out a card," and then you fight through all that. Yeah, I think that's where it is. I mean, how many football games did we go to this year? And we've kind of, since COVID, right? Since COVID, we've made the adjustment, and at the beginning of the year, we go through, we print all of our rosters, have everybody there, because a lot of times we get into this situation where places aren't printing rosters. But I'm telling you, it's just so nice to have that paper copy that you can write on, you can flip it over back and forth. I often think of the fans that you'll see sitting there with their number two, and they're, you know, making notes in the program, keeping their own score, and, you know. So,
yeah.
I think it's just one of the things you're going to deal with it.
Okay, what about guys like me? All I got is my flip phone in my shirt pocket, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of out of luck here. Yeah. I don't know if that's Jimmy or Billy or Susie or Nancy, or I don't even know who's out there playing or where they're from or anything about them.
Just enjoy the game, right? Watch the ball go through the hoop, and the rest is just
cheer for the home team,
right?
Cheer for the home team.
Exactly, you know. Used to say cheer for the ones in the white jerseys because that's always the home team. Well, anymore, that's not always the case.
Not necessarily what happened.
I thought maybe there for a second you were going to go down the road of last Thursday. This kind of came down right about the time Sports Look happened, and that was that Keisha went ahead and approved the.
Okay.
You know.
While we're rolling,
I was
going
to say,
let's
go. I thought that was the wormhole that you were headed down.
Let's go.
But yeah, last week, Keisha went ahead and said they were going to start a pilot program on shot clocks. Okay?
Correct.
You had to put in whether you want to use a shot clock or don't want to use a shot clock. And if you don't, you must provide a reasoning why. And then I think at the end of either the end of every game or the end of every week, you have to fill out a survey and send it in. If you opt in to the shot clock, you're in. Like, you can't decide 5 games in, wow, that's difficult, we're not going to do it. You have to stick with it. I think this is a thing for 6-5, maybe even 4A type teams, but I'm kind of wondering what your opinions are. I mean, I've got strong opinions when it comes to shot clock. But I think a lot of that is because I grew up with the shot clock, right? Like watching it in college basketball every week, and you say, every game, to me, should have a shot clock because, again, it makes the game a little more interesting. You no longer worry about a team putting it in the freezer. It bumps up your points, especially you don't have to worry about teams that are trying to hold on to the ball and get out of a quarter because they're in foul trouble. The fouls reset now, you know what I'm saying? So you've kind of taken care of that. I love the shot clock. Your theory.
Okay. I kind of like a shot clock sometimes, but not always. And I'm not adverse to a team. And we watched this out of Bramlage 3, 4, 5 years ago now when St. John was playing in a tournament. They went, 6-7 overtimes? Because they would get the tip to begin the overtime and hold the ball. And take one shot in the last 5 seconds of the overtime to either win or you go to another overtime. And they had a big guy who was going to jump it off. So they were going to get the ball. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that was their tack. And we've seen schools who play against a school that's bigger, stronger, faster. And the coach says, you know what? I'm going to take that big, strong, fast away from him. I'm going to hold on to the ball and take literally 2 shots a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I suppose I would rather lose 12-6 than 78-14.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand why you want a shot clock, but it does take, a little bit of the strategy that some coaches might implement as a fan. I think, generally speaking, you like to see them go up and down the floor. And you're right. It's going to cause trouble for a lot of schools because, and the good news is this is what Keisha's calling a pilot trial. It's not just a trial, it's a pilot trial. And if you decide to use a shot clock, you're going to have to do it for every regular season varsity games. That includes any regular season varsity tournament games that your school hosts. And it will have to be for both the boys and girls, but varsities, not necessarily for the JVs, okay? Got to tell your incoming opponents before the season, okay, we're running a shot clock, so you've got to know that. And the school is going to have to not only come up with a shot clock, but they're going to have to get the equipment, they're going to have to wire it in, they're going to have personnel in place, they're going to have to train them, as to how it's going to work. And they don't even have all of the details worked out. The Acacia says, we'll have this figured out by the fall of 2024. So they're not even sure just how it's all going to work, other than they have set at 35 seconds is what the shot clock duration is going to be. So, and it will not be utilized in any classification for any round of postseason next year. These are all strictly going to be regular season and or tournament games, you know, mid-season tournament games, not postseason games.
Which I like because, again, if you're a team that has not dealt with the shot clock all season, let's say your conference, you don't deal with it. And then all of a sudden you get to sub-state and they say, shot clock, go. And you're like, wait a second, I haven't dealt with that. I don't know it. And can I tell you, I like it as a fan, but we've seen the shot clock for so long, I couldn't imagine running the shot clock.
It's hard.
It's a difficult job. It's not just like game clock. That's hard enough. Shot clock's its own beast, right? Because, again, that ball goes on the backside of the backboard. Like, it hits the square and goes on the side away from the scores table. Did it hit the rim on its way down? Did it change the direction? You reset the shot clock and the officials decide you shouldn't have, or vice versa. I mean, it's a tough one.
Now, last night, I'm going to tell you, at Peru State, I was at the scores table, which I've told you a million times, I never like sitting at the scores table. But
seat in the house, right?
Two people to my left was the young person who was managing the shot clock. It was a student, okay? No big deal. Students do a great job. They're bright individuals, you know. They're college students. They're smart kids.
Right.
But they were not particularly adept at this. And we had one of the officials was over, as the play's going up and down, was forever going over and like waving at him, going 2-0 or whatever to reset the shot clock to whether it goes to the full duration or whether it gets reset to 20 or whatever. And it had to distract the official a little bit from the other things he was doing to make sure and keep that person at the scores table, you know, with the right number up on the shot clock.
Right. Yeah. It's tough.
And high school officials don't know. I mean, they've never done this,
right.
So they're going to have to deal with it a little bit, too.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that, yes, if you're a high school official that also doubles over into college, it's a little easier.
Right.
But if you've been a high school official for 30 years and all of a sudden now here's the shot clock, you're like, all right, I've seen this in college basketball, but, you know, just making sure that we're all up to speed.
And by the way, I don't see any notification in the 2024-25 basketball shot clock pilot trial outline here by Acacia. I don't see where there is a, if the ball hits the rim, we reset to 20. Is that just implied?
That's the other thing, you know.
Is that just, are we assuming that's what's going
to
happen?
Does kick ball reset the whole shot clock?
Yeah.
Does it take it to 20? You know, I mean, those are a lot of questions to be dealt with.
Whole bunch of details in that. So anyway, we got that. We got the, do you like the paperless and cashless? And do you like the shot clock? Let us know what you think. That said, we're going to share some more. We got so much more sports talk as we continue on a Thursday here on Care. Benedictine was on the road last night, Gus, as the Ravens traveled up. It's a short hop, nothing to it really, going up to Peru State as Benedictine had a couple of conference games. You think it's going to be a short trip, you think it's going to be easy, but it was neither one for the teams because they had bus trouble, or didn't get away from the school in time. Everybody was fine, but the vehicle wouldn't run, and so they had to get another bus, and they got late, and the 5:30 game was going to be at 6, and then ultimately, well, we're going to make it 6:15, and so we didn't get the earliest start in the world. But let's start with the Lady Ravens. For the Benedictine women, that was not a big deal because they dispatched Peru State rather handily, 70-58, in a game that, oh gosh, I don't know. I don't think it was ever really in any question at all.
Yeah, it's kind of like the first time you played them, right? You go back to November 21st, that was just back before Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Peru State came to the Nolan, and you were able to knock them off 87-69. Last night, Lady Ravens had no problem. Can tell you, they go up to Peru State and typically play pretty well. You look at that first quarter, it was nip and tuck, right? 18-16. But then the second quarter, you pulled away, you doubled them up 14-7. And then in the third quarter, you came out of the locker room. That's where the Lady Ravens have struggled a little bit, is that third quarter. In this game last night, they didn't do that. They scored 28 points right out of the locker room. They were led in scoring last night by Lauren Dubert, who came off the bench. She gave you 21 minutes. She gave you 16 points She was 3 of 6 from behind the arc, 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Now my Josie Weiser coming in off the bench last night. She gets you in double figures in her 9 minutes of play, shooting 4 of 9 from the field and hitting half of her 3-pointers. So again, really nice balance coming off the bench for the Lady Ravens last night. Their starters, what, 8, 7, 7, 5, 5.
Yeah. Jennifer Jacobs was going to have a double. No question. I think she might even have had a double-double, but didn't get to play. She picks up foul number 3 and then foul number 4 less than 30 seconds into the second and third quarters and back out of the game. I mean, she saw quite limited time, 15 minutes, which is a very small number for her. You're going to see her up nearly double that. She's going to be bumping 30 minutes a game. And so she grinded into a little bit of foul trouble. But again, when BC went to the bench, they played really, really well. And Coach Folsom ultimately was able to really exhaust the bench and get everybody a little floor time. And that's always kind of nice to see. Let them all get out there and get some time on the floor.
Also, give your starters a little bit of a rest. First of all, get a W. That's a big deal.
Huge
right?
deal.
But you also give your starters just a little bit of a rest because you've got a tall task Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be any luxury trip because you are going to be headed up to Dubuque, Iowa. All right, first of all, that's awful. All right. Going to Dubuque, there's no joy in that. Then you play not only a good team, but a great team who's number 4 in the nation, undefeated in the conference, undefeated on the season. They're 16-0 overall, 12-0 in the heart. And you know what? But oh, just throw on top of that the defending national champion.
Yeah, and they're a team who beat Central Methodist 2 nights ago, right? They played Monday night against Central Methodist, knocked off Central 78-60 at Puckett Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
Right? So they weren't at home. They went on the road for a Monday night game and win by 18 against Central Methodist. Games that happened earlier this week, Graceland beat Penn 75-62 on the ladies' side. It was Grandview over Mount Mercy 65-45. I think that might be a little bit of a surprise to me because Mount Mercy's been playing really well since the break. Mid-America seems to be figuring out their footing, and they're getting a little better right now. They knock off Missouri Valley the other night, 75-58. Valley then turns around last night and lose to Baker, 60-49.
The stunner of the conference right there.
So, again, now there's a handful of games tonight in the conference. So that's one of those kind of funny things where we actually have Thursday night game, so you're going to have some teams playing Thursday and Saturday, which is the way it probably should be, right? Well, that was always my favorite
Monday,
schedule.
Thursday,
Monday,
Saturday.
Thursday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Games going on in the conference tonight. In Parkville, you'll have Mid-America at Park. Mount Mercy will travel to William Penn. Culver will be over at Central Methodist. And Graceland will make the short trip up the road to Des Moines. What's that, maybe an hour?
Oh, yeah. No. Maybe. Yeah, no more than 45 minutes. So, again, the conference is really beginning to space itself out a little bit with the top 3 teams, Clark, Grandview, and Benedictine. Then you get into that middle pack with 6 and 7 wins. You got Peru, Mid-America, Graceland, Mount Mercy, Missouri Valley, all jammed up in the middle. And then you fall down to the 3-4 teams with Culver, Park, Baker, you know, and like that.
Is Mid-America making their run?
Yeah.
Is this their push?
This is it.
Right? Because a week ago, we were talking about Mid-America as being down at the bottom of the pack. They were struggling a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, they've been able to rattle off some wins. They're starting to look like a competitive team. And
there's a problem they've got. We talk about 20. There's not enough games and not enough chances. They can't get 20.
Right. So now you're trying to position yourself as high as you can in the conference tournament and then make a run at the end.
Yeah, you're hoping to get maybe a home game. I think they're in pretty good shape to make the conference tournament at this point, you know, is the way they're playing. But, you know, there's still nobody out of the tournament and there's nobody there's nobody locked in. Yeah, Clark, Grandview, Benedictine, Valley are all – they're all in, I mean.
But my thing is, for Clark, is it a competitive advantage probably to be undefeated because – not only do you get the home games, that's one thing, but you get the home games and you are, I think Lori called it a footprint was what the conference is.
A geographic footprint.
You are the big toe of the conference, right? You are the furthest most team in this conference, every team that's going to travel to you. I mean, even at Grandview, what, you're still 2 hours away? Right? Oh. From Des Moines up? I mean, 2.5?
Oh, three? More, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's one of those things that you have the advantage of not just road trips, very long road trips to get to Clark.
Yeah, only when they've got halfway closed Mount Mercy.
Right.
So anyway, congrats to Coach Folsom, the Benedictine Lady Ravens. We look forward to watching them as they are at Clark on Saturday, high noon. You'll hear it here on Care Radio. Taking a break. We'll be back. Sports Look rolls on a Thursday. Gus, last night, the Benedictine men up at Peru State and Ravens having a tough go of it a little bit as they come up short to Peru, 73-57. But here's the thing. Peru is really, really good. And they were good to start with, and they have gotten better as they add a player at the semester who in 2017 and 18 was playing at Northern Arizona. He's 25, maybe 6 years old. And
well, so when you started player. With 27, I was like, yeah, he's like 27 now. yeah, so Peru State is one of those teams that has taken advantage of, you know, being able to get some transfers, get them eligible right after the break. That's one of the difficult things about basketball. If you see a team before the break and you play them really close, you're like, okay, I expect the next game. Problem is, Christmas break, because basketball is a two-semester sport, could go very well, could go very bad for some teams, right? How many times have we seen a kid in semester one play and then maybe not be with the team or, you know, whatever in semester two, or vice versa? Didn't see him the first time around, but all of a sudden somebody got healthy, somebody got eligible, somebody transferred in. All of those things happen over the Christmas break, and it happened for Peru State, and they did well with it. Now, for Peru State, they're one of those teams that most of the scoring has to come from their starters, right? And their starters play a lot of minutes. You had Traylor playing 38 minutes, Wingett playing 34, and Christian played 30 minutes. You got 15, 14, and 12 points out of those guys, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they have to do. They have to score with their starters. And last night, they were able to do it. For the Ravens, they struggled a little bit to get that bench scoring going. They did get Hagen to get you 6, and Jack gave you 11. But from the starters, the only guy getting in double figures, Gino Corridori, with his 12 points last night.
Yeah, but here's the deal with Gino, and we talk about this periodically. You know, again, here I am, old guy. I like to see my five taking five-foot shots. Gino scores 12 points, 3 of 4 from three-point range, okay? His points are coming from the outside. Great shooter, don't get me wrong. I mean, he can score from outside. You need his points, and you're good to getting those. But for Benedictine, not getting a lot of what they call points in the paint. I mean, they're credited with 22 of them, but, you know, some of those are follow shots and stuff. I mean, it's hard against a Peru State team that started 6'5", 6'5", 6'7", 6'7", 6'7". That was a starting five for Peru. Big cats.
Yeah, I mean, they're all big guys. And you talk about Gino. I mean, he is your post player and was your best three-point shooter last night. I mean, he was, as far as efficiency, he hit on 75% of his shots. Jack hit 3 three-pointers as well, but he was 3 of 7 coming off the bench for his 11 points. Preston Reynolds dumped in 9-8 for Bryson LaRue. So for the Ravens, like I said, it was a tough game. Went into the locker room down a dozen in the second half. You were able to kind of keep close, but got outscored 34-30 in the second half. And for Benedictine, they're going to now have to turn around and look to a big game Saturday as they're going to make the road trip, as we talked about, up
really,
to Clark.
Really important game for the Ravens because you know you have to beat the teams that have a worse record than you. Clark is one of those teams. Clark is a 3-13 team coming in and 1-11 in the conference. And I know it's a road trip. It's a two-day jaunt to go up to Dubuque. But you got to circle the wagons up a little bit, come away with a W here, and look to try to build a little momentum as you, again, are approaching February.
Yeah, so right now, you're not looking at the top of the conference. You're not worried about what Central Methodist and Graceland are doing, right?
No.
You're just starting to look at the teams in front of you and say, how do I get in front of William Penn? How do you do that? You knock off Clark.
That's a first right? step.
So step one is beat Clark. You know what happens next Saturday, you're going to go to William Penn. So you got another shot to win that game. But again, you can't get to Penn unless you beat Clark. Like, you've got to start taking it a step at a time. And so for Coach Moody's team, again, Clark is a great opportunity for this team to, you know, get on the winning track. Games going on this weekend. We talked about the games that are happening tomorrow or tonight in the conference, but how about we dive forward a little bit and look at all the games that are going to happen around the conference on Saturday. It is going to be Saturday, January 20th. Park is going to go to William Penn. You're going to have Valley at Graceland, Mid-America at Culver Stockton, Grandview at Baker, Peru State at Mount Mercy. There aren't many of those games that, like, just grab my attention, right?
Yeah. Now, one more thing, and then as we wrap up our quick look at Benedictine, this conference is a 13-team conference. What does that mean? That means that somebody's not playing every game night. It's going to change probably next year because last week, after having joined in football, Missouri Baptist completed their paperwork and has submitted officially their application to join the conference as a full-fledged member, and that will include basketball. So, very likely, we're going to be back to the STL next year.
Yeah, you know, when we were over there for football this year, we kind of asked them about that. You know, they left the American, and the American dropped football, right? So they had a few teams that were in it, but then William Woods is coming into the conference next year, right? And so they were kind of elusive when we tried to hold them down to an answer whether they would come over. Their problem was that they liked it. They had what? I think Science and Pharmacy right there in St. Louis was a good one. Harris Stowe was also a team that they played over there in the St. Louis area. So those were two rivalry games. And honestly, if you join the conference, the Heart of America Athletic Conference, you don't really get to keep some of those rivalry games because what? You get like three or four games that you get to schedule outside of conference games. So you've got to be a little pickier on what games you're going to schedule. So, again, interesting to see, though, that they are going to try to enter the conference because it just maybe makes sense for them.
We'll see what the new commissioner, Nick Rule, has to say and how he's going to be able to have an immediate impact on the conference structure.
Okay. So you're adding maybe Missouri Baptist. You are adding William Woods next year. You're adding St. Ambrose, right? It makes you start to wonder, like, now that you're starting to become maybe even what I call a super conference, right? As you push to 20 teams, that's kind of where I call it a super conference. Once you get to kind of that 20, do you split it off and be like north-south like you do in football and you really don't ever see those teams again?
Well, what you're going to have to do, certainly there's no double round robin. There's not enough games in a year available to you to play. You only can play 29, so that's impossible. So, yeah, what you're going to do is maybe, you know, like you see some of them, and like they had experimented with a couple of years ago, you play every team in near division, home and home, and then you play the teams on the other half, you know, the other division, you know, once a year, and then that will allow you to play, you know, those traditional rivals that you like to get in and, you know, and still have a healthy conference schedule, but it will not be, you know, full home and homes. Can't be. I mean, just the numbers just won't allow it.
Right. So, again, it's just one of those things to, you know, add on, you know, what will is yeah. Kind of one of those things. So.
Hey, what we will do, take a quick break. We're going to come back. Sports Look rolling on a Thursday. Back with you here on Sports Look on KAIR-FM Horton Atchison. If I get to stick around, we've got some coaches' inside shows coming up after this. And Gus, divisional playoff weekend in the NFL, and one of the teams we're still playing, Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of people didn't think they were going to defeat the Dolphins. It was a cold game, and I don't think the cold had much to do with it. I mean, it was a fun. I mean, was it easy? None of that. But I think the Kansas City would have beaten them if it was 70 degrees and in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think the Chiefs were going to have any problems last week with, you know, winning that ball game. And so I think that it's one of those things. I know people are probably getting tired of hearing the term playoff Patrick, but I just feel like we talked about it last week on Sports Look that I expected Kansas City to, for lack of a better term, you know, simplify the offense down too much. I thought it would be Kelce, Pacheco, Rice. It was those three guys against the Dolphins the other day. The other thing is, man, this defense looks really good right now, right? They held Tyreek Hill down. They held Jalen Waddle down. Those two guys didn't even combine for 100 yards.
Literally held Tyreek down. I saw him put him on the ground and keep him there.
And honestly, if Tyreek doesn't catch the 53-yard touchdown, he ends up with, you know, somewhere around 10 yards of receiving on the day. I mean, Snead is showing how physical he can be. You've got McDuffie playing good football. I just think that right now this team is very flawed, that's for sure. But again, understanding how they need to win, and that's what they're doing at the moment.
Saturday's two games. The afternoon game is going to be the Texans at the Ravens. That won't be much of a game. And the night game is going to be the Packers at the 49ers. That will be a pretty good game.
Because you think the Texans win by double digits, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think that the Texans are even a factor in this game.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't believe it. I think that the Ravens are just good enough to be.
I like what the Ravens have done all season. But you know how we talk about playoff Patrick?
Uh-huh.
I talk about playoff Lamar. You talk about a guy who has the highest winning percentage of any quarterback to this point in NFL history without a playoff win. He's a guy who struggles in the playoffs. I think he's good enough to win. I think this team is definitely poised for a championship run. But if you told me that the Texans went into Baltimore and win on Saturday afternoon, I'd say, yeah, I could see that. I mean, I'm not going to be shocked if Baltimore comes away losing that ballgame. They didn't play the last week of the season. They didn't play last week. And this is an offense who settled for, and this is a Kansas City fan saying this, an offense that settled for a lot of field goals this season was Baltimore. I just wonder how long it will take them to knock the rust off. The Texans look hot. C.J. Stroud might be the best quarterback left in the playoffs at this moment, like just this season alone. I think the Texans have some weapons. I'm not going to be shocked by any game this weekend, okay? Because we're just to that point where you're like, okay, I can see that happening either way. I think the Texans keep this thing kind of close.
Baltimore, 9.5-point favorite, and I will give those points. I think they win by 10 or more.
See, I think if they win, it's going to be a late field goal or they win by 5. I just don't know that they win by a full touchdown margin.
In the night game, San Francisco is at home with Green Bay, and San Francisco is a 9.5-point favorite. Give me those points because I think the Packers win it outright.
Really?
Yes, I do.
See, Jordan Love is playing well. I'm telling the Packers.
You like CJ,
good.
And I do too, but I think Jordan Love he's a class act.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the Packers are playing well. They seem to know what they want to do. Jair Alexander on the defensive side looks pretty sharp. But again, I don't know how much stock I really put into them beating the Cowboys because I thought the Cowboys were maybe a little bit overrated all season. They were kind of like the Dolphins, right? They beat a lot of really bad teams, but who did they beat? And so I think that the 49ers come away with a win here on Saturday.
On Sunday, 2 o'clock, it'll be the Buccaneers in Detroit. And, man, I think Detroit is extremely good. I thought that game one when they played Kansas City, I think it today. And I just don't think the Buccaneers are good. And I'm certainly not a fan of Baker.
I'm not a fan of Baker, but I am a fan that Baker knows how to win, right? He did it at Oklahoma. This is an expensive ticket.
He didn't do it at Cleveland, did he?
He got that team back to the playoffs, right? Yeah, and that was a whole thing in itself. I think this game is probably the most interesting of all of them. I think the Buccaneers win. For the mere fact that for the Lions last week, they did what they came to do this year. Make the playoffs and win a playoff game for the first time in 30 years.
Yes. So you think that they're happy?
I think that was it, right? Like, I don't think we really looked forward to, we've got to win, like, two more games, right, to get to the big game. I just wouldn't be shocked if they come out a little flat in this ball game and Baker gets up and then sets on a lead and you know, come away with a win. I'm going to lean Tampa Bay here. Now, again, anything I say, I would go 30 points the other way, right? The Lions win this thing looking like the Packers against the Cowboys, okay?
Okay, so here we go. Final game, fourth game. Kansas City is going to be at Buffalo. It's 5:30 Sunday, late afternoon, early evening. Buffalo, you know, home teams always get like 3-point buffer. Buffalo's a 2.5 point favorite coming into this one. I think that this is going to be a tremendous game. I'm a homer enough to think that Kansas City is going to be able to win because I think that when it comes down to you got great players on both sides and this and that, I think this is an Andy Reid magic game.
Yeah, Andy Reid working against, you know, one of the coaches off of his tree, right? I think that I watched the Buffalo game Monday against the Steelers, okay? Uh-huh. I had one real problem with that game. In the first quarter, Buffalo challenged two plays, missed one, got one.
Yep.
Problem was, in the first quarter, you're out of challenges. In the playoffs, sometimes you got to pick your battles. Sometimes that first down just isn't worth it, right? Give it up. I don't think that he got it, but we're going to let him have it because I need that challenge in my pocket. That was just a bad idea by Sean McDermott and the Bills. I think that that's the way the Bills approach things. I don't think they're just really planned out. I think it's like, hey, let's see what we can do, right? And I just think Andy is, you know, just going to be a little more calculated, a little more ready for this game. I'm sure there are things in his back pocket that we haven't seen this year. I also think when the Chiefs played the Bills earlier this season, that was a Kadarius Toney game. And, you know, was he offsides? Was he not? He was. Did the play count? It didn't. But was it pretty cool? It sure was. You got to remember, Pacheco didn't play in that ballgame. Now, the Chiefs running backs ran the ball okay, but I expect Pacheco to be a big part of the offense this week. You know what else? I know Sky Moore is now going to practice this week, and Kadarius Toney is practicing a little bit this week. I don't expect either one of them to be active for this game, which means those guys can't hurt you this weekend, right? And that sounds crazy to say, but I just think that's the other part of that. And the one name I want you to take away from this game, going into the Chiefs-Bills, I think the playmaker is going to be Drew Tranquill, linebacker for the Chiefs, right? He didn't play the first time these two teams played, and Buffalo threw the ball out of the backfield really well, hit the running back. I think he had like five catches for 83 yards. Tranquill is one of the best coverage linebackers in the game. And now all of a sudden you match him up with your running back, he's not getting those free releases. He's not going to get 83 yards. And the Bills, with all of those things said, barely won that game in Arrowhead. I just think the Bills have a lot of injuries. The Chiefs do not. I think that Josh Allen gives the football away quite a bit in the playoffs. Patrick just doesn't. And so, again, if you told me that if you had looked in the future and Monday you tell me, hey, I saw it, Chiefs lost by 20, I'll say, huh, I didn't see it coming, but I'm not shocked by it. But if you said the Chiefs won by 20, I'll say, okay, sounds right. I mean, I just am not going to be surprised with anything because I don't have a whole lot of faith in this Chiefs team, but I just think they probably win this game against the Bills. As crazy as that sounds.
Flipping quickly to NCAA basketball, Kansas. They lose a game, turn around, win a game, still number three in the country, and they travel to West Virginia. Not easy to play at, but it'll be easy for them.
You see, and that's another one we laugh about. Kansas seems to always lose this game at West Virginia, right? They go to Morgantown and lose to West Virginia all the time. But again, West Virginia, different coaches. I think Kansas is maybe okay in this one. Kansas State has just been an anomaly for me all season, right? They're one of those teams who they look like they could be a top 10 team, and then two games later, they're just like, what?
But I don't want to play them.
No.
Don't want to play them.
They're going to be at home with Oklahoma State on Saturday night, and I think Kansas State will come away with a nice win there.
Well, we're going to see a lot of great basketball, and there's going to be some fun games and some great big wins, and it'll all begin tomorrow night. We go down to the Oskaloosa tournaments for the guys. Saturday, Benedictine at Clark. Tuesday, round one at JCN tournament from Winchester, and then next Wednesday, BC finally back home after over 3 weeks on the road. Ravens hosting Central Methodist. We got to thank Kamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, High Voltage Bar and Dance, Exchange Bank, and Taco John's. Tim, we'll greet you next time. For Gus Kautz, Tom Kautz. So long, everybody.